of you are going to be looking into going to Bush once you finish high school. So
if
they finish high school.
Yeah, that's so clear. I see some of those people. That's so clear. Right?
You know. I'm going to say if they ever leave Bush. Okay, it's becoming.
Okay, good morning, good morning. Let's get to get some names in. Hashem, what's your name?
Yasmin.
Yasmin.
Taya.
Taya. I know Jared.
Benjamin.
Benjamin. What's your name?
Achinoam.
Achinoam.
Nechama.
Nechama. I met you 2 years ago. Yeah, you're one of the good ones. You're like real on top of the shit. I remember Nechama. Yes?
Ellie.
Ellie?
Gabe.
Gabe. Okay. So, I was told some of you are learning Bava Basra, some of you are learning Bava Kama. So, I wanted to pick something that would be equally interesting. So, everyone turn to Daf Yud in Bava Basra. Guys, hold off on the cereal, okay? Hold off, okay? I got some Torah here. Cereal can wait. Enough to eat. Let's get into it. Okay? What's interesting about the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, seriously, who are the figures that you associate with the Churban Beis HaMikdash Sheni? Does anyone know the destruction of the second temple? Can anyone give me 4 or 5 names that were very prominent in that whole process? Anyone, which Rabbanim, which Chazal, who are the people? When we talk about the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, oh, that first Beis HaMikdash, that was thousands of years ago. Who even knows about Yirmiah and Yoshio and all these people that wore sandals and herded their goats? But who are the people of the second Churban? Anyone know? Who's the person most affiliated?
Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai.
Excellent. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. What was his role?
He went out to speak to Vespasian.
Very good. He was smuggled out to speak to Vespasian because they didn't want to let them leave the city. He made believe he was dead. You've heard the story. And essentially, it's not just a one-off Ellie, right? It's not just a one-off swap. Basically, Yochanan ben Zakkai is switching Judaism from Beis HaMikdash ritual Yerushalayim to the Beis HaMedrash, the Beis HaKnesses, the community. Essentially, Yochanan ben Zakkai is revamping Judaism for exile. We're no longer going to live in Yerushalayim. Won't have korbanos. It's an interesting swap. You can imagine a lot of naysayers, right? You're giving up the Mikdash, giving up Yerushalayim. You're swapping the Beis HaMikdash for the yeshiva of Yavne. But it wasn't a swap. It was more a reimagination of where Judaism is heading for the next 2,000 years. It's foresight. It's intuition that now this isn't going to be a 70-year exile. Galus was 70 years with our cousins in Syria. It was 70 years with our cousins, Lavan. And they had the sense, because they knew they were coming back, because there were explicit prophecies, they're coming back in 70 years. People had the sense that this is going to be a long-term process. This is going to be a long... They knew that there may be, unless we improved our behavior, it was clear to our forefathers that there was going to be a long exile called a Galus Arucha. A long exile that Yaakov already saw when he saw those ladders and he saw angels going up and going down, going up and going down, and going up and going down. And then he saw one angel just rise and never descend. And he looks at Hashem and says, well, what's that angel? And Hashem says, well, that's Edom, that's Rome, that's Western civilization. And there may be. Look, history is never, never closed. It's never, never rigid. History is always fluid. And you can change history. But there are patterns, and patterns are established. And Hashem told Yaakov, there's this pattern that you may hit called the Gullus of Rome, the Gullus of Edom, the exile of 2,000 years. And your children may even be in Australia. Like Yaakov said, what Australia? Like, how far can you? Yeah, I'm not picking on Australia. Rome and Russia and Los Angeles and Spain. And remember, the first exile was local. We just went around the corner to up north for 70 years, and went back to Israel. People still lived in Israel. But this long 1,800-year journey, that 1,900-year journey that we're in the process of concluding, they had that sense. And Yochanan ben Zakkai was preparing for that. Who else is associated with the second Beis HaMikdash? The Churban. Which are the names, facts, and figures? Well, who would be the second on your list? Maybe the first person on your list, but certainly after Yochanan ben Zakkai, who? Rabbi Akiva, excellent. What's your name again?
Gabe,
excellent. Rabbi Akiva. Who's Rabbi Akiva's Rebbe? Do you know who his Rebbe's were? He had 2 Rebbe's. Okay? One was Rabbi Yehoshua, and one was Rabbi Eliezer. And actually, they started the first Batei Medrash after Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai left Yerushalayim. So you're starting to see the transformation of Torah. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai leaves Yerushalayim. The Rebbe Yehoshua started a base Medrash, and their star Talmud is Rabbi Akiva. Now again, just like if you're dating, Rabbi Akiva lives through the first base, the second base of Mikdash destruction. Anyone know when it occurs?
70 AD,
70 BC after the Common Era, CE. But he's a younger man. He's already a Talmid Chacham. He's already past 40. But then he lives till 136. What happens in 136? It's a great rebellion of Bar Kokhba that Rabbi Akiva supports, and then that's our last whiff. That's our last stand. And then Rabbi Akiva is martyred. So we'll talk about Rabbi Akiva being martyred. Remember the 10 martyrs that we read about? The 10 martyrs didn't all occur in one moment. It's not as if they took them out on trial, 10 people, and they murdered them. It was a long process which began in 70 AD. Some of the older people, Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, Rabbi Shimon, those were the older ones. And then the younger ones were executed and were martyred around 136 CE. Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Hanani ben Trajon, Rabbi Yehuda Sheva HaSofer, people that Mirz Hashem, sadly on Sunday, will read about. So Rabbi Akiva is this other figure. Now what's fascinating about Rabbi Akiva is there's a sideshow taking place to the national tragedy. It's a national tragedy. Am Yisrael's being destroyed. Beis HaMikdash is being ransacked. But the Jews are never on the margins of society. The Jews are driving history. And we have a role in history. And our role in history is to stand for Hashem and to teach the world and to demonstrate morality, and to demonstrate monotheism. And you know what? We're doing a pretty good job. 2,000 years have passed. We've been gassed, expelled, discriminated against, murdered, killed, hated, and yet we've changed the world. We've converted the world into a world of morality. We've converted the world into a world, and basically people see all this diversity out there, all these difference, black, white, cold, hot, day, night, good, evil, on. It's all Hashem. It's all one. All comes from one being. What? Crazy. What does that mean? It's all Hashem. Hashem Echad. There's no reality other than Hashem. Hashem creates everything. It's all about Hashem. And by and large, the world is trending in that direction. Most of the world is Christian. Most of the world is Muslim. Less of the world is paganistic. Less of the world worships idols and multiple gods. And so we've changed the world and we've played that role. And on the one hand, there's a national tragedy. We left Yerushalayim. We lost the Beis HaMikdash. But who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash? It wasn't Iceland. It wasn't some Native American Indians. It wasn't the Ming Dynasty. It was the major superpower of that day, Rome. And when Rome and Judaism clash, despite the fact that Rome vanquishes Yerushalayim and destroys Yerushalayim, there's an interaction of cultures, and our culture influences Roman culture, and through Roman culture, the rest of the world. Basically, we're always interacting with major empires, and we're always defeating ideas that these empires challenge humanity with. We defeat them. So, for example, who destroyed the first base of Mikdash? Anyone know?
Babylonia.
Who was the king of Babylonia? Nebuchadnezzar. In Nebuchadnezzar's era, you had the emergence of the first multi-regional dominant empires that ruled the entire world. Who's the most famous empire that ruled the entire world that we read about on Purim? Vayhi bimei Achashverosh, Hu Achashverosh, Hamolech, Mei Hodu v'yad Kush, Sheva v'yasrim v'yad Medina. So Achashverosh ruled over 127 provinces that essentially circumvented the world. But he wasn't the first. Nebuchadnezzar tried to dominate the entire Mediterranean crescent. Sanherif, who destroyed much of the north of Israel, tried to dominate the entire Middle East. Paras Amada tried to dominate. And Baruch Hashem doesn't want that. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want world tyrants that impose their will with an iron fist upon the entire world. Hashem wants each country to have their government, to have their state, to have their family, to have their culture, to have their nationhood. I don't want there to be this one major force that dominates it. That's unfair. That's unjust. It tends to be brutal. So when we're interacting with Nebuchadnezzar, when we're interacting with Achashverosh, and then when we interact with the Greeks during Hanukkah, and then when we interact with the Romans, essentially we are standing tall against this threat to humanity that there will be these tyrants that will rule the world. We stand there and we defeat them. When I was your age, everyone lived in mortal fear of the Soviet Empire. You remember me, you're probably old enough. Terrified. Soviet Empire, nuclear war. What will the Soviets do? Who can oppose the Soviets? They're so threatening. They own Hungary and Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia, Latvia and Litva and Poland and Romania, and they're going to conquer the entire world. And who was willing to oppose him? 3-4 Jews in jail cells in Moscow who said, I want to be in Israel. If you're Fashtunkana Jews. And we fought for them. We worked for them. And finally, they released those Jews. And 3 years after Natan Sharansky crossed the bridge in Germany, the entire Soviet Union crumbled. Because that's who we are. We don't shiver in the face of human convention. We're not terrified by human constructions. They're all just fades. They're just paper tigers. We see Hashem. We see eternity. We don't live in this world. We live in many worlds. And nothing scares us. Nothing frightens. I'm frightened of Iran. I'm concerned with Iran. We have to deal with Iran. No one knows the conclusion. No one can bank on Hashem's Ratzon. But they'll come and they'll go and they'll fade and they'll pass. And they've come before and they've passed before. And these things come and go like the wilting leaves of the tree, like the rustling of the wind. We're not terrified. We stand tall in the face. One of the parts, we haven't got to the bus yet, but one of the parts of the Jewish people are compared to, anyone know a trick question in Brachos, we're compared, because we're so plentiful, to three different parts of nature. What are we compared to? Obviously, stars. Stars means we're above history, we're above nature, we're celestial, we don't operate in this world. What else are we compared to?
Sand.
Sand, because unfortunately we're trampled on from time to time, but we're resilient. But we're compared to the mud as well as the sand. The afar is the dirt, and we're also compared to the sand. What's the difference between dirt and sand? Why are we compared to each? If you look carefully, we're first compared to dirt, but then in Parshas Vayera, at the Akedah, we're compared to sand. The whole world used to be full of water before Hashem took, look at that map behind you, took all the waters and condensed them into oceans to create dry land for human beings to live. We're not fish. Without dry land, we can't live. Hashem took the waters, he covered Amayim, said, water, land, you each keep your distance, okay? I want the water to remain. It's an amazing miracle. When you see the ferocity of the ocean, you think it should engulf the land, right? Every time the tides come in, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeping the sea at bay. Gvul Samta Bal Yavar. And Hashem says, I'm not going to let the sea overcome the earth. Gvul Samta. That is not just a geological drama, it's also a moral drama. The waters represent void and chaos and evil and dysfunction. And the waters, the forces of evil, are always trying to get onto the land and devour this world. And in 1944, they tried to devour the entire world, the forces of evil. And there's one people that has to stand as the fortress of humanity to prevent evil from taking over this world. Who do you think that people are? Who are the people that stand at the front line defending what's right and what's wrong? The Jewish people. That's why we're the sand. We're the sand because we're the fortress against the sea. Just like the sand keeps the sea at bay and prevents the sea from engulfing dry land, we're the sand of humanity. We stand, that's Rabbi Soloveitchik, by the way, we stand at the, we're the sand of humanity. We always, always stand against evil. So it's an interesting period, because if you don't just look at the Beis HaMikdash, and again, don't avoid it, because that's such a national tragedy, and that's, we miss it so much, and you can imagine a world, don't just think of sacrifices and blood and rams and horns, and think of a world of supernaturalism, okay? Let's say, Nechama, let's say you're living in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, and let's say I'm a Navi, I'm just play the role with me. You would sit with me this morning for half an hour, and I would know exactly who you are through Ruach HaKodesh, through divine intuition, and be given exactly how you should grow, how you should develop, what you should choose in life. And now you're living in 2019, and it's a strange world where you're not sure, and I'm not sure either, not just you, and trying to find our way. And just don't use the word Beis HaMikdash, use the word supernaturalism, prophetic input, spiritual miracles. You're just in a different world. You're just in a different place. Could you imagine if the next time you performed an Avera, it was clear Hashem said that was wrong? It'd be pretty obvious to you you should improve yourself morally. We live in a world of moral confusion. Remember how you feel at the end of Yom Kippur, where you've fasted for 24 hours, and you really feel close to God, you really see things clearly, and you really say, you know what, I'm going to be a different person next year, and I'm going to improve this, and I'm going to change that. And then 5 minutes later, it all gets washed away by reality. Can you imagine if you can lock that in and live that type of life minute by minute because you felt Hashem's presence clearly? You walk into the Beis HaMikdash and you saw a basically a different world. Boys, imagine wearing tefillin all day. A little different, but that's what we will and what we did in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, and we'll return to that. Tefillin all day. A little different. You may not be as involved in some of the things you're involved in with that tefillin on all day, but it's just you'd be happy about it. Sometimes you can't imagine you've fallen so far, you can't even want that state. So, but I promise you, you'll be happy about it, and girls will be happy about the spiritual. So what's happening, though, is there's a lot of contact between the Roman Empire and the Jews. it's not just military, because by the, after 1:30, after the insurrection of Bar Kokhba is suppressed, so one of the great figures in Jewish history who has less to do, he's in the second century, is Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi writes down Torah Sheba'al Peh. And by his point already, the Roman oppression subsides. He had very good relationships with his Roman counterparts. So 1:30, you're already looking at the, I'm sorry, 1:30, you're already looking at the Bar Kokhba rebellion. Then a little bit later, I'm sorry, 36, and a little bit later, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi becomes the leader of the Jewish people, writes down Shas. So let's take a look at Gemara, Daf Yudim and Aleph, where the Romans are now not destroying the Beis HaMikdash, but they're having a conversation with the Jews about religion. And they're trying to learn this thing called monotheism. Remember, this is a lot of religious ferment now. Christianity is emerging. And again, Christianity, we have a dual relationship with. On the one hand, Christianity was responsible for such bloodshed and such torment of the Jewish people. On the one hand, Christianity really is paganism, because any attempt to apply anything physical to God is paganism. On the other hand, it's moving towards monotheism. It's a mix. Christianity is a mix between basically Hashem, God, is unknowable, non-physical, you can't understand him, you can't imagine him, but there needs to be something physical, so his son was physical. And that's the Avodah Zarah part. That's the part that is absolutely paganism and absolutely heresy and absolutely, not just heresy, but ridiculous. And God is born, God is a child, and that's what we've died for. That's why I'm sure every single person in this room has an ancestor who at some point in history was willing to defend their belief that God can't be physical with their life. And that's why we're here. And if we weren't willing to, we wouldn't be here. Because the deck was stacked against us, and the only way we survived was because we loved Hashem more than we loved ourselves. And we were willing to die al Kiddush Hashem. And that's why we're in this room. And it started with Rabbi Akiva. But Rome is not yet, it's not paganism. They're not worshiping idols and forests and trees and fish and gold. They're not really paganists, but they're not yet fully monotheists. They're not considering one. They're not yet at the point where this variety in life can be seen as one. They're what's called, if you want a fancy word, they're polytheists. Polytheist means their gods aren't physical, but they're many. Zeus, Apollo, Diana, Mercury, all the gods you've read about in Greek and Roman mythology. So they're elegant and sophisticated enough to know that God isn't a paper bag, or God isn't a dog, or God isn't a cat, or God isn't a season. But they can't yet grasp that everything in this world can come from one. So there's a God of love, and a God of wine, and a God of anger, and a God of lightning, and a God of... So they're starting to understand on the way to... This is a very, very interesting period in history. Christianity, Rome is thinking. Rome ultimately turns Christian. 6th century Islam. So there's a lot of religious thinking. One of the great Roman religious thinkers was a philosopher slash general named Turnus Rufus. Sounds a funny name to us, but in Rome that would sound like a cool name. Hey, Turnus Rufus. My name is Turnus Rufus. And he had a lot of conversation with Rabbi Akiva. And let's eavesdrop on one of his conversations about Rabbi Akiva, about religion. It wasn't about military. It wasn't about persecution. So despite the fact that ultimately Rabbi Akiva is martyred, here's a conversation with Rabbi Akiva about the following. So take a look at Bava Basra, Daf Yudim and Aleph. Okay, line number 7. Vizu She'ela Shal Turnus Rufus. You see that funny name, Turnus Rufus? Don't name your son Turnus Rufus, but Turnus Rufus, okay? We'll call him the Big T. So the Big T has a conversation with Rabbi Akiva. Im Elokechem Ohev Anim Mipnei Ma Eino Mifarnesam. Interesting question. Fancy word. I'll teach you a fancy word. There's a whole book written about this in Tanakh. It's called theodicy. Theodicy means the problem of evil. If Hashem is all-powerful, which he is, and Hashem is kind, which he is, and those are inalienable, there's no force other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And second of all, Hashem likes people. He is a melech harachamim. Don't let Islamic fundamentalism hijack Hashem and turn him into a god of anger and vengefulness and happiness when people die. Kadosh Baruch Hu is mechalak el chayim bechesed, mechayim esim berachamim rabim. Kadosh Baruch Hu is avinu avarachaman hamrachim rachim aleinu. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants human beings to thrive. He wants human beings to prosper. He's melech ohev shalom and mishpat. So how could there be evil in the world? And by the way, Christianity fails at that. The Christian answer to that is, well, God is responsible for good, Satan's responsible for evil. A rebel angel. An angel rebelled in heaven who was trying to create evil, and he created Hitler, and he empowered Hitler. The second you introduce other forces into this world, you've basically destroyed monotheism. There is no force, there is no... You know who Satan is? There's no such thing called Satan. There's a malach hasharis called Satan, who gets up every morning with all the malachim and says Shira to Hashem. We just said it. It's a kaddish, 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 like all the malachim. And each malach attends to their task, and Raphael goes and gives that refor shalema to people. And you know what the job of the satan is? To make you a little weak and a little confused so that your freedom of choice will be real. Because if you saw the world as clearly as you see on Yom Kippur, it'd be a no-brainer to do the right thing. And the satan wants to make you tired. Satan wants to make you weak. Satan wants to make you tempted, and so that you can make a real choice. So he's a malach Hashem. The Malach Hashem, whose job this is to make sure, it's like the Malach HaMavis isn't an enemy, he's a bus driver. He collects people who go to Shemayim to bring them when their time is finished. You have the big yellow pad, okay, you bring them to Shemayim. There's no force other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this was Ternus Rufus's question. Why are there poor people? Why do people suffer? Why is there evil in the world? Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu create hardship and suffering and difficulty? Zush Eila Shalat Ternus Rufus, this would be Akiva. Im Elokechem Ohevaniim. So it's a long conversation, but I'll just describe two of the answers Rabbi Akiva gave. Okay, these are not the complete answers. Believe me, there's a... Is that... We're finished?
2 minutes.
Okay, so I'll give you the two answers. There's an entire book written about this. Of course, it's Sefer Eov. And the conclusion of Sefer Eov is we don't know why. And part of religion, boys and girls, is we don't know everything. And sometimes life, when you're young, you think if you just work hard enough, you'll get all the answers. But when you become adult and mature, you realize life's about finding answers, but also living with questions. There are a lot of questions I have in this world, but your Yirat Shamayim, your recognition that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has wisdom that you can't understand, that we'll never understand, that has to stabilize your reality. I don't understand Holocaust. I don't understand... These are older boys and girls, right? These are, you're older, these are, okay, so I'm going to talk about something very sensitive, okay? And I hope with your permission, but I think it's an important message, okay? How do we deal with homosexuality now? Well, I'm going to talk about how do we deal with the homosexual. I'm sure you guys know and have friends. And now I'm talking about the question of how you relate to the person. How do you relate to the concept? How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu create someone who, at least according to modern science, has genetic tendencies when he says it's usher? I just don't understand that about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm not willing to question HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon is simply unquestionable. He said it's wrong, it's Aser. On the other hand, I'm not willing to question the integrity of people who are good, normal, healthy, sincere people who have those tendencies. I'm sure you know them. I'm sure you've met them. So there's a clash. The answer is, I don't know. I don't have an answer to that question. But I'm not. Sometimes life is living with questions. I don't know what the answer to that question is. I'm not talking about how to relate to your friend who is coming out. That's for your rabbis to deal with. But life's about... 40 years ago, 50 years ago, people had to live with the Holocaust. How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu let it? I'm not comparing the two, obviously. But life's about living with questions sometimes. And if you don't have all the answers, you submit to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you just say, I want to understand it. I know that one day we'll understand it. One day I will understand this, but maybe not in my lifetime, maybe not now. So I'll just give you the two answers that Rabbi Akiva gave to Ternus Rufus. One answer is that when we perform chesed to an ani, obviously the overwhelming primary reason that we help people out is because we feel people's pain and feel people's suffering. And how could you not? And how could, if you have a hard heart and a cold heart and an insensitive heart, you're not, chas v'shalom, chas v'shalom. Girls, and this in a couple of years, they're going to be getting married one day, and girls always come over to me asking for shidduchim, and they come with their big list, and they say, what should I want with this, and I want this, and I want this. And I take the list, and I rip it up, and I say, I'm not interested. Just marry a boy with a kind heart. Just make sure he has a good neshama and a kind heart and who loves people and will love you. Everything else will work out. That's the root. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked his Talmidim one day, what's the most important trait? And they all offer different opinions. Shachin tov. And one Talmud, Blazer ben Arach, said leiv tov. Just have a good, kind heart. So, of course, the first reason you perform chesed, the first reason, and if any of you at this stage in school are yet involved in chesed, I strongly, strongly encourage you to find a chesed to be involved in. Either in the school or outside of the school. And I don't just mean serving lunch, because that's your shift. I mean special needs, older people. You really just try, because it helps you appreciate the fragility of the human condition. It helps you become less selfless and become less selfish. Then it's closer to feel closer to Kodesh Baruch Hu. Once you decentralize yourself, try to find chesed. But there's another reason we perform chesed, and it's not just because I want to relieve the distress of the sufferer. It's I want to be like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Rachum, and I don't know him, and I can't describe him to you, and I can't paint him to you, but one thing I know that he loves human beings, and he created a world of chesed, and everything outside in this world, if the world was 1 inch closer, so 1 centimeter closer to the sun, we'd incinerate. 1 centimeter further from the sun, we'd freeze. It'd be the same science and the same physics. Hashem created a world to support life. And I woke up this morning, and Hashem has been breathing life into me since the moment I said, Modani, even though I don't deserve it. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is gomil chesed to us, especially to Am Yisrael in this period. And I want to be like Hashem. I don't know him, but I see his handiwork. I see that he's someone that creates a lot of health and well-being and kindness to people. And therefore, I want to shape myself. Chesed isn't just altruistic, it's also self. I want to sculpt my personality. My morality is never subjective. Oh, look at the standards in our society. I just want to keep up with the standards. To be a moral and ethical person, you're chasing an elusive, infinite standard. You're chasing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I want to be like Hashem. And when we be like Hashem, there's no limit. There's no what other people are doing. There's no what other people are deserving. Someone comes to your door, they deserve, they don't deserve. It's not just about your chesed for that person. It's about your being a Bala chesed. And that was Rabbi Akiva's first answer. I'll tell you a story. And that's why you have to see chesed. When it comes to midos, you have to see real people. You can't just learn it from the sefer. I just had surgery 2 weeks ago. Thank God I'm feeling better. But about a week ago, I was sitting, I'm literally limping. It would take me maybe 10 minutes to get to the door. I went outside, sitting outside in the front porch, about literally 30, 40 feet from my front door. And a poor person came to my door. And I was in a lot of pain, excruciating pain. And it would have been very, very, very easy for me to say, I just can't give you any money because I just had surgery. And immediately, within a second, the image of Avraham Avinu popped into my mind. And if Avraham Avinu, at 99 years old, who had surgery far worse than what I had, far worse, on a part of his body that I'm sure was a lot more painful, without anesthesia. Western cowboy style. You know, take a shot of whiskey, put a branch in his mouth. Ah, ah, ah. I'm sure, right? Okay. Another shot of whiskey, Avraham. Ah, ah. I had anesthesia. I was relaxing. I went under. And Avraham gets up and he runs and he gives him food. Mari is running. So you know what? If Avraham Avinu could be that committed, I can do my part. Okay, so midos you learn from people. It's hard to learn midos from the sefer because it's just so abstract. Okay? That's the first answer. In 3 seconds, the second answer Rabbi Akiva says is, even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Aniyim and people suffer, and you think that the Jews have been discarded, we're not Avadim, we're not slaves, we're His children. And Hashem never, never leaves His children. Never. That's called a bris. And as hard as Tisha B'Av is, and as difficult as it is, remember at Chatzos, 12 o'clock more or less, when's Chatzos? If I were early, about 12 or so, our Avelo starts to subside. You know why our Avelo subsides on Tisha B'Av at Chatzos? Because that's when Beis HaMikdash started to be lit on fire. It's a very strange concept. That's when the fire began. So we decrease our Avelos? The answer is because there was a debate in Shemayim. And the angels were saying, these Jews have betrayed you for 400 years. Don't over-glorify the first Beis HaMikdash. It was terrible. There was adultery, widespread paganism, widespread murder. So there were many in heaven who said the Jews deserve to be discarded and replaced. And Hashem said, no, I will not. I'll pour my wrath on some stones, some wood. And the second the Beis HaMikdash gets lit, that's when the decision goes down in heaven. I will never, never abandon these people. That's why we're a little bit smiling on Tisha B'Av. Don't smile. That's why we sit on a chair, we put on tefillin. Because at that point, the covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu was consolidated for eternity. No matter what you do, you're my children. You may fail me. You may betray me. You may disappoint me. I may not be that available to you. But you are my children. You are my wife. We have a covenant. And even though poor people suffer, don't take that as a sign that Hashem doesn't want you to help them out. Why they're suffering? Because we live, unfortunately, in a world in which Hashem is still not as apparent as He should be. Okay? So that's the discussion in Baba Basra, Daf Yudim and Aleph. I hope maybe to see some of you girls and boys over Shabbos. Anyone daven in Mizrahi? Okay, there's a little tish tonight at the Joneses. So everyone come. We'll talk a little bit more about this Shabbat, okay? Thank you again, Rabbi Berlin.
So our
Torah
will be available at recess, if anyone wants to
show that.
Okay.
Good morning. I've come to steal you,
Rabbi. Okay, steal me.
Who are you?
Okay.